The end of the growing season can seem a little sad, and it can be hard to get too excited about fall garden cleanup, but a little work now means a better kickoff for next year's growing season. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. There are many great varieties of fruit that we grow here in Wisconsin. Today we have an expert who can both help us pick the right types for our garden and know how to get them through a long Wisconsin winter. Scott Royce is the UW Extension Horticulture and Ag Agent for Marinette and Florence Counties, and he joins us today from our WPR studios in Green Bay. And Scott Royce, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Really pleased to have you with us today. What's your weather like in your counties right now?
Cold this morning. I actually had a chance. I walked across the field right at my place, and the soil was actually frozen this morning.
Oh.
So it's by far the coldest we had up our direction. But, you know, we're definitely at the end of the season. It's a little bit earlier than recent years where we've had this level of cold, but it is what it is.
Yep, is what it is. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. I think sometimes we think that if we don't have acres to devote to it, we shouldn't try to grow fruit, but that certainly isn't true.
No, growing fruit is one of the joys of being out and about in the garden because of the sweetness and flavor and nutritional value that we're able to get from them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a pretty broad range of fruit that we grow here in this the state, especially our home growers.
Yeah, actually both home and commercial, Wisconsin and Michigan are both known for their variation within the fruit industry that we have here.
What do we need to do to help fruit crops get ready for 2014?
Well, the honest answer to that partially depends on what your growing conditions have been over the course of 2013. Some areas of northeast Wisconsin in particular had pretty darn good growing seasons this year.
Yeah.
Other parts of the state, not so much. So there's definitely some variation. But there are a couple of things that all of us need to at least be thinking about doing. Partially, you have to think about the hardiness of the particular fruits that you're growing. The hardier they are, the less you need to do now to get them ready for 2014. If they're a little edgy on hardiness for your particular area where you're growing them, then we have to probably do a little bit more as far as making sure that they're really ready to get into winter and protected for the winter and then able to come out of winter and head into a good growing season for 2014.
Yeah, I'm sure. Can you share some of your favorite fruit varieties for our home gardeners?
Well, there aren't too many I don't like.
That's good.
Well, I guess the one way to start would be with some of the tree fruits. We've actually recently up in our area, we went through a trio of apple tasting events that were hosted by UW Extension and the Northern Lights Master Gardener volunteers. And we had one of our local orchard owners, Tony Dembski with Maple Valley Orchards. And he raises literally hundreds of different cultivars of what you would consider to be heirloom apples.
Wow.
And then a few other tree fruits as well. So over the course of those three tastings, we got to sample about 75, 80, something like that, different apple cultivars.
Oh, man. Tough job.
Yeah. Well, tough to remember.
Yeah, that's the problem.
You've got to take really good notes to even think about, okay, now which one was that I... Yeah, so because there's so much flavor variation out there in the apples and pears and raspberries and strawberries and everything for the fruits, really there's more variation than a lot of people give them credit for.
Yep.
So, you know, if you're thinking about buying a tree fruit, or a fruit tree, I should say, there's many different factors to take into account. Obviously, flavor has to be one of them. Of course, I always recommend starting with hardiness. I kind of mentioned that already, but make sure that they're going to be hardy for your growing zone and your microclimate area. But then give yourself the best opportunity to utilize that fruit to its maximum effect, and make sure that you're able to try that cultivar in a couple of different ways, and then think about flavor, storability, how they work for you if you're an applesauce connoisseur, or however you're going to actually use them.
Yeah, absolutely. Stone fruits, peaches, plums, apricots?
Yeah, there are. There is an expanding array of cultivars in the stone fruits that are hardy throughout the state. Obviously, if you're in the southeastern corner or southwestern corner, you have a little bit more variation and choice. Up here, and especially in parts of the area that I cover, where we're really zone three, you have to pay attention to what you're buying, but the stone fruits are fantastic. You know, there's nothing that beats the fresh cherries, plums, apricots, peaches, etc., off of the tree. And even for something like peaches, which most of us think of, well, they need to be grown in the southeast part of the country or maybe southern Michigan or something like that. But there are a number of peach cultivars that are becoming or have been selected for increasing hardiness. A couple of those.
What do you recommend out of those?
Well, Contender is one that has been proven to be fairly good up here. The trick with peaches, I try to caution people and be realistic about it, because even though they're going to survive, at some point we're going to get a winter that just hammers them, and they're going to probably either get killed back or at least have major branch dieback, because peaches are, no matter how their hardiness is rated, when we get a hard winter, they're going to get hammered.
Yep.
But for stone fruits, the tart cherries have been selected for sweetness recently, and there are a number of pretty darn hardy tart cherries that are very good eating fruit as well. They don't just need to be saved for pies anymore. North Star, Montmorency are a couple of the more standard ones, but Ballotin, Black Gold is a relatively newer one that has very good flavor.
Excellent. And we have a number of people who have questions for you, so I want to go to the phones right now. Let's turn first to Frank in the Green Bay area. Frank, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. My question is about blackcurrants. I have a couple of bushes that aren't doing very well where they are, and I'm going to move them to a spot where the soil is better. And I'm wondering, should I move them now or should I wait till the spring?
Well, you've got opportunities both directions. If they're not real large bushes, I wouldn't be afraid to go ahead and move them yet this fall. You could either, depending on whether they've got leaves or not, I only have a couple of currant bushes at home or at our demonstration gardens in Marinette, and they're kind of on the edge right now because they're hanging on to their leaves, but they're really at the end of the growing season. So you may want to wait until they're fully dormant, or if they've got full leaf material on them yet, as long as you can get most of the root material, you could go ahead and do it now. Otherwise, early spring transplanting is always a good bet because they're easier to work with usually. But we do have really good soil moisture, and at least from Green Bay North this year, so it should work pretty nicely for fall transplant too.
Well, there we go.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. He mentioned black currants. Red currants, we can grow them in the state too, and a lot of people do.
Yeah, actually, there's three different types of currants. There's red, white, and black. The red are actually the hardiest. They're also the smallest. Currants are one of those fruits that people either really like or really hope they never see again. because the flavor of them, well, I've had a few master gardeners that grow them describe the flavor of eating them fresh as kind of like drinking pine pitch. So some people really don't like them very well, but they do work really nice in preserves and jams, jellies, wines, etc.
Yeah, Judith Sears Poisson tells me that she fell in love with black currants when she was in Russia, and and she fell in love with red currants when she was in France.
Yep.
World traveler that she is. And certainly there you're going to find them in both places in abundance. Sandy in New Berlin has a question. Hi, Sandy. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks. It's my pleasure. Hi, Larry, and hi, Scott. Here's my question. It's actually about mulching trees. We were told that shredded bark is the very best mulch for trees, and it's time to do that, and the price is kind of high. And we have a recycling center that allows us to take mulch and shredded bark that's piled up there. And the question is... is that going to introduce disease? I need an expert opinion.
Okay. In general, that should be a safe bet. There's two things to watch out for. Number one, if your municipality has a number of black walnut trees, then you need to be a little bit more careful about taking mulch from a municipal pile like that, because the black walnut content could be high enough to actually hurt some of your plants. If you don't have a lot of black walnut, then you're past that. The only other thing to consider is if you've had a, if you've noticed a lot of trees dying, and some places in eastern Wisconsin in particular have soil types where we may have more verticillium wilt that could affect some types of trees. I don't worry too much about that, because usually there have to be other entry points as well as a little bit of mismanagement to get verticillium from mulch into trees, but it is still a recommendation to avoid that. So it is a little bit of a balancing act.
Just thinking about mulching, is this a little early to be mulching those trees, or are we? Is this about right?
Well, there's a couple of different answers to that, I guess, is the honest approach. For most trees, we're probably in at the time of the year when we can go ahead and do it. If you're working with something that's really marginally hardy and your primary goal of mulching is truly winter protection of the root mass, then I'd actually wait a little bit, at least in most parts of the state, until the soil cools off a little bit more. Quite honestly, in Marinette, Florence County, after this last week, we've got low enough soil temperatures. We've got all kinds of options timing-wise. Normally, it's more like Thanksgiving time when we want to do mulching of our trees and our mildly tender herbaceous perennials. The term I use is you usually want to do your final winter mulching when the soil is crunchy but not frozen solid. And like I said before, that was this morning at my place. So,
okay. There you go, Sandy.
Well, thank you very much. I got more than I bargained for this morning.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sandy. Scott Royce, our guest today, UW Extension Horticulture and Agriculture Agent for Marinette and Florence Counties. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in to this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, UW Extension Hort and Ag Agent, Scott Royce. Great to have him along. You may have a question. Join us at 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page, post a question or a photo there even at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Certainly always love to hear from you. And, Scott, we have Debbie and Tomahawk next with a question for you. So let's go to her. Hi, Debbie. Debbie, are you? Whoops, hold on a second. Let's try again. Debbie, are you there?
I am.
Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a new asparagus patch that we planted 2 years ago, and we've never had asparagus, so we're not sure exactly how to harvest it or how to winter it. And I'm getting different opinions from different people. Can you tell me what I need to do to my asparagus to overwinter it?
Well, unless it was really stressed, nothing. Asparagus is one of those things that we're blessed with, in that it is extremely hardy. So as long as you filled in the trench in which you planted it correctly, you really, truly don't need to do anything to overwinter it. A lot of asparagus growers will wait until the fronds are completely yellowed out, and then they'll cut them back either to 12, 18 inches tall or almost all the way to the ground. But as far as mulching, you don't need to do anything with that. Unless you've got a really infertile soil, there's no reason to do anything from a nutrient management right now. Normally, we're better off with asparagus doing early season fertilizer management, but again, kind of based on your exact soil conditions. So you can check in with your local extension office if you're a little bit concerned about that and either have soil test values along or they'll have a better idea of the exact soil fertility in your area.
Mm-hmm. And I don't need to cut it back at all?
You don't need to, no. If you did have a heavy infestation of any insects or diseases, then that would be a reason to maybe get rid of that material. But asparagus, usually we don't have too many things where we have to worry about over the winter.
Yep.
There you go. Great, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Deb. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's turn to Marge in Monroe. Hi, Marge.
Good morning. Thank you for your informative programming.
Appreciate it. Appreciate your call.
I have a question about tomato. This summer I was given some tomatoes that I've never seen the shape of them before. They're meaty like a Roma tomato, but they're 4 to 6 inches long, almost like a shaped almost like a pepper, a hot pepper.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was wondering what type of it was and if seeds are available for it.
Well, I have to go off on a little bit on a guess there, but there are a number of heirloom paste-type tomatoes that meet some of those definitions and descriptions that you have there. I would be flat-out guessing to go beyond that as far as an absolute cultivar name, but if you look for some of the heirloom paste types, particularly if you have access to a web page and go out on something like totallytomatoes.com or some of the other commercial sites, they have pictures and descriptions of those. The trick is that there's, again, just like with apples, there are literally hundreds of different cultivars of tomatoes, but if you look under or type in heirloom paste type tomatoes, you might be actually able to find the exact one that you were growing.
Yeah, I was thinking Seed Savers Exchange too, or seedsavers.org.
Yep, Seed Savers is another good one. And because of the fact that tomatoes are generally self-pollinated, if you still have any of those fruits and want to save seeds, it's not all that hard with tomatoes. You just basically mash them up, put them in a jar with water for a week to 2 weeks, depending on the temperatures, and let that ferment, because you have to get the fruity coating off of the outside of the seed, but then the good seed will separate from the rest of the material and sink, and then you can pour the rest of the stuff off, dry those seed off, and then store them in the freezer or a fridge generally over the winter. And you'll be able to do your normal seed starting next March or whenever you get going.
Mm-hmm. Well, this type of tomato has very little seed and very small.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'll try that. Thank you.
Yeah,
so
give it a try.
Yeah, as long as the fruit were mature, the seed should be viable.
Yep. Thanks, Marge, for calling. Zach in Madison, your turn. Hi, Zach.
Yes, hello. Good morning, everyone. I've got a cherry tree on my property, and this is the first year. It's only a couple of years old, and this year was the first year that it really significantly flowered, and I've got cherries all over it, but unfortunately, you know, it's this time of year, and they're about the size of cranberries.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like it's going to make it in terms of, like, you know, giving me harvestable cherries, and I was wondering, is this a function of the tree being young and that the first time that it's actually producing fruit, or is there something I can do to kind of expedite this process and make sure that, you know, the cherries get bigger than cranberries and I can actually harvest?
Okay, that's definitely an unusual tree. Normally, cherries are known for their early bloom and early fruit maturation, you know, finishing off with harvest even in some years as early as late June, but mostly into July or a really late one in early August. So something must have triggered a relatively late bloom in that particular tree, or depending, you know, there could be some cultivar characteristics that allowed it to create that situation this year too. But like you are guessing, the best real possibility is that it was a function of the tree age and the conditions that you had in your climate. As far as triggering it to bloom at a more normal time next year, you're probably just going to have to let it go dormant naturally right now. And one thing I should have mentioned before with stone fruits, one of the things we really need to watch for is a disease called brown rot, and that kills the fruit a little bit early, and they basically mummify and stay on the tree. So that's one of the things that we can be doing at this time of the year with particularly stone fruits, but really all of the tree fruits after they've been picked normally, is get all of those mummified type fruits off the tree, because that's usually how diseases will overwinter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I should try to pick all the fruit off the tree even though it's immature?
At some point, yes.
Like, how do you detect, what does that mummification look like?
Well, the fruit will look basically like a browned or blacked out version of themselves, and usually about one third to half size. With the cherries, they usually.
That doesn't sound like my problem, because the fruits all look fairly normal, you know.
Okay.
But for like about a month and a half ago. So, I mean, they're like, most of them are fairly red. Some of them are a little bit pinkish, but, I mean, there's no color changing involved.
Yeah.
Okay, do you know offhand what cultivar that is?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I don't.
That one is a little bit of a challenge. I've never encountered a cherry tree that has fruit this late in the year, so you may want to follow up with some of the locals there and see if they've experienced anything else like that, or you've seen any other trees, because that is a new one by me.
It could be a variety that you may want to, well,
avoid.
Avoid, yeah.
Not good for this area, but unfortunately, I got a big tree in my yard now.
Yeah, or it's one of those you might wind up pruning near the ground level and starting over again if you really want the cherries.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, you know, I'd give it another year and see what happens for sure.
Yeah, like I say, it definitely could have just been a combination of conditions, because we'll see stuff do that. I mean, we have a peach tree at our demonstration gardens in Marinette County that every third year or so it blooms about a month later than it should.
Okay. And why? We don't know, but it just does.
Nope.
Jeff in Milwaukee. Hi, thank you for calling. Jeffrey.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was wondering how to apply the tree wrap. I bought a pear tree, and I wondered how to apply the tree wrap, and then if I needed to do anything else to winterize it besides that tree wrap.
Okay. Well, that is a very positive thing to consider doing. Anywhere in the state of Wisconsin, we're going to have to deal with wildlife issues over the course of the winter. Now, whether you are dealing with meadow voles or meadow mice, that's how a lot of people know them, and rabbits, or rabbits and deer, or whatever combination of wildlife you are dealing with in your particular garden area, will dictate what type of tree protection you want to do at this time of the year. The tree wraps, whether you use the actual wraps that are tight right on the bark or something that's a little bit looser, those are great to protect against rabbits and meadow voles and antler rubbing from bucks. But you just need to make sure that you're covering the material pretty well. And going reasonably high, you know, trying to think about how deep the normal snow depth is in your area, because that's how high we want to protect them. Timing, you want to wait until the trees are basically dormant, in a perfect world at least, to put those types of materials on, and make sure that when we get into the growing season next year that you take those wrap type materials off the tree. Otherwise, they will open the tree up, the bark, I should say, to more insect and disease presence than they would have if you didn't have that material on. If you're dealing with more larger wildlife, then you may want to go more to a fencing situation. Obviously, with deer in particular, you need to go preferably 6-foot high fence around either each individual tree or also around the entire fruit orchard. But rabbits are also another one that you may need to think about fencing, or at least something like metal hardware cloth that, one other advantage of hardware cloth is that you can leave that on year-round because it allows airflow, so it doesn't inhibit the bark formation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have an email from Chris in Trempealeau. When would be the best time to transplant lilacs?
Well, lilacs are pretty generous in their opportunities for us. They are pretty hardy as well as pretty precocious. So now is perfectly fine if that's what works best for you. Otherwise, obviously, as I mentioned before, early spring is always a great time for transplanting because they're just coming out of dormancy. They're able to get started right away and then be able to go from there and get ready for the rest of the growing season.
Joan in Shorewood, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hello. I was so taken with your talking about saving tomato seeds that I almost forgot what I wanted to talk to you about. I have my tomatoes this year. I'm still looking out the window and seeing the plants growing way up with these little cherry tomatoes into the lilac tree next door. I don't know what happened. I planted the tomatoes in time, but they were almost all bush most of the time, and now they think they want to produce tomatoes. But my real question is about my raspberries. I transplanted 2 wonderful raspberry plants into my garden. I have a 6-foot fence between the parking ramp and the garden, and there were 3 arborvitae trees, little ones. Well, I planted these raspberries, and in these last 2 years, they have almost suffocated the arborvitae, but they've gone up over the fence and down into the parking area so the alley people have raspberries, and I have raspberries. And in fact, last night I picked a cup of raspberries, and again this morning. But what do I do for the winter that I can kind of lead these things the other way, away from the trees and into the yard?
Well,
do I clip them down or do I just let them go?
Okay, well, let's start with a couple of things here. Obviously, if you're getting fruit now, they're a primocane bearing possibility type or a fall bearing type.
Yep.
So they can, if you manage them for it, they'll actually have 2 different crops, a fall crop and a summer crop.
It did.
Okay.
Okay. So with a lot of people, you may want to think about if they normally fruit early enough in the fall to get mature fruit. Otherwise, some people will manage a fall type for a fall crop only, and literally when they get done with the growing season, they'll just mow them off, and then they get earlier fruit in the fall the next year. If you're just trying to get them to move more in a general direction that you want, usually raspberries are precocious enough. You don't need to coax them along. It's just give them an opening and they'll spread. So if they're not going the direction that you want them to, there could be some kind of an impediment that doesn't show up readily. Otherwise, just literally take a couple of the younger ones and transplant them over there, and they'll fill in the space. One of the biggest problems that most home raspberries growers have are not doing enough pruning. We allow them to have way too many canes in the patch and not enough airflow. That leads to all kinds of disease and insect problems. So usually thinning and then proper pruning is very key to having a healthy raspberry patch.
What is proper pruning? What do I do this fall? They come up at least as tall as I am and then curve down and go back into the ground again.
Okay.
Do I cut all of that off and hope for the best?
Well, the first part of that depends on if you want two crops or just one. If you only want a fall crop, then absolutely, you can literally just mow them off. If you want both a summer and a fall, then it's probably best to approach it from the standpoint of taking some of them out, but leaving some of those young canes so that they have your summer fruit crop next year, because those are what we would call the flora canes, the ones that can survive the winter and then form fruit. Primicane bearing or fall bearing types, though, if the young canes emerge early enough and they've got good enough growth, then they can bear fruit that first fall. So it becomes a balancing act on how many canes you want. If you have good rows, you usually only want about 4 to 6 canes per foot of row, no matter how wide your row is. If you look crossways across your raspberry patch and you can't see through the rows, that's a definite sign you have way too many of them.
There you go, Joan. A little work ahead of you.
Oh, do I have time to ask you a question about a tree? Do you have time to?
Okay.
My husband planted a beautiful maple tree in our front yard 50 years ago when we moved into this house. He died about 8 years ago, and right after that, the tree started dying, and one of the roots had curved around and evidently shut off the breathing under the ground. Well, I spent thousands of dollars having a guy come and try to treat it, and this last year he said, I think you better just save your money and have it cut down. I want to replace that tree, so if I have that one cut in the next month or so and the root dug out, is it possible to plant another maple in that spot? Of course, I won't be around the next 50 years to see it, but how does one do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely sounds like it was killed by a girdling root, which is pretty normal for maples. They tend to get planted too deeply, and then they end up with girdling roots. But as far as replacing it, it's certainly not a problem. You probably will want to move over a little bit and not put it in the exact spot where that one was, but you don't need to go a long ways away either.
No.
Really, you don't need to do or go wholesale with trying to get all the roots out either. They decay faster than most of us realize. But just move over, you know, even 5 to 10 feet and find a good spot for it. But when you put it in the ground, whether you're going to do it yet this fall or next spring, make sure you pay attention to proper planting depth, especially with the maple family. We have to look for the roots that actually curve away from the trunk rather than going off at a 90-degree angle. If you buy a tree that's been in a pot for too long, they'll have fake roots on them. And you need to look for those curved ones and put the new soil line basically at where those curved roots start coming off of the tree rather than the fake ones that may be up a little bit higher. You actually need to prune them off during the planting process.
My I'd be tempted to wait till spring on those, but I don't know. On planting a new one?
Yeah, I probably would too, but you may be able to find some cheap ones yet at this time of the year. And as long as they're dormant, they'd probably work. You just have to support them.
Mm-hmm. Joan, thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Olivia in Richland Center, your turn. Hi, Olivia.
Hi. I have a hibiscus tree that I planted in my yard early this spring. And I'm just wondering, do I have to dig it up and take it in the house, or can I just mulch it, wrap it, and leave it alone?
I'm not real familiar with them, so I would pay attention to what it says for the not the maturity, but the hardiness zones. My limited experience with them indicates you're probably going to have to take it inside. But if it's a newer one, there may possibly be able to treat it that way and leave it out there and just really mulch it well and cover it up and stuff like that.
Yep.
But my guess is that you're going to want to treat it as a big house plant.
Okay.
Thanks, Olivia.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Visiting today with Scott Royce. Scott is the UW Extension Horticulture and Agriculture Agent for Marinette and Florence Counties. It's great having him on today. Certainly inviting you to join in with your questions. We've been dealing, he's a real expert in with fruit trees, but certainly as you've been listening, he answers a whole broad range of questions. So the number is 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy you've turned your radio on to our network of stations here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Scott Royce, UW Extension Hort and Ag Agent for Marinette and Florence Counties. And lots of callers online. We've got some emails, so busy times ahead here. Scott, let's go to Neil in Cameron next. Neil, hi. Thanks for calling.
Got three crabapple trees. They're non-fruit-bearing that we planted in the summer of 2012, about an inch and a half diameter trunks. And two of them got what I think was like a spot or like a scab, I guess it's scab maybe is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some Funganol, like I said, maybe it's a brand name, and it sprayed on it. I'm curious if that is going to take care of that issue, you know, like for next year, or is this something that we're kind of stuck with on these trees now?
Well, most crabapple trees are relatively susceptible to the fungal disease called scab. It affects apples, crab apples, pears, etc. It is something we have to manage. During the dormant season, you can try dormant oil and lime sulfur treatment to help prevent overwintering of the fungal spores on the tree. Good cleanliness is another key step. So literally trying to rake up all of, in your case, you don't have to worry about the fruit because it also affects the fruit. But get all the leaves and any fruit off from around that area and send it away. Or you can go ahead and compost it and use it, but don't use it around your fruit trees. You know, use that compost on your vegetable garden or something like that. But then probably you're going to have to plan on doing a little bit of management next spring, particularly when the leaves are still emerging, when they're about a quarter to half size. If we can hit them with one fungicide treatment, or if you don't want to use a synthetic fungicide, you can try something like Surround, which is a kale and clay product. It looks literally like you're whitewashing your tree. And I don't know Funganol, like you say, that's a trade name. I don't know for sure what the active ingredient is there, but I believe that both Captan and chlorothalonil are pretty good active ingredients against the scab fungus. So if you look on the active ingredient part of it, you'll have a better idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a chlorothalonil ingredient in that one. And it's lime sulfur, is that a dry product that's sprinkled on, or is that wet, or what is that?
That's something you spray on. If you do a dormant treatment, you want to get the tree basically soaking wet, because otherwise they don't work very well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I think I missed part of the answer to my other question right when I called in, because you were answering it about, we have, like, I'm assuming it's either mice or voles or something that's chewed up part of the bark at the very bottom of the tree, bottom
mm-hmm.
6 inches or so. How do we protect that? I kind of missed that answer when I called in.
Yeah, meadow voles are very common rodent problem of young trees. Number one is habitat modification. You know, at this time of the year, make sure you go through and clean up the areas around your trees. Don't have any tall grass relatively near the trees, because then they move out and move away, so that helps at least. But then using either a hardware cloth product or a bark wrap or the plastic wraps or whatever you have available that's lowest cost, I guess, and try to protect that tree trunk up to, depending on your location, you know, up to anywhere from 2 to 4 feet, depending on your normal snow depth.
Okay. Can I ask one more question about mushrooms?
Okay.
We have mushrooms just proliferating on our lawn, and I told the wife last night, I said, we should learn which ones are good and which ones are bad. We could probably live off of them. Is there any real treatment for mushrooms? Is there a product that we can apply? I kind of worry about our pets getting into these things.
Yeah.
Well, in general, with the types of mushrooms that are going to form the actual fruiting bodies now at this time of the year, you don't need to worry much about toxicity for animals. But also, on the other hand, there's nothing we can do about it. They're growing throughout the year in the material under the soil. And when they get the right conditions and combination of temperature and moisture, they're going to send up their basidiocarp, or that fruiting body, and just do their spore formation. There really isn't much we can do about it other than
short of drying up your lawn.
Well, yeah, you can just mow them off. You can do things like that to hide them. But the material is underground, and we can't really do anything effective to get rid of it.
Thanks, Neil, for calling. Barb in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Larry. And say, I was wondering if you would know why my North Star cherry tree is acting so oddly. I had a North Star, which I had to cut down because we had to redo our septic system. So in 1999, I planted this one, and it's very prolific. It puts out a lot of fruit, but even people comment on it when they come in the yard. It only has leaves on the very ends of the branches. So, like, the cherries all form on last year's new growth, and then you have this big, long, skinny branch, and then a clump of leaves at the end. And that's what it looks like. It's just really strange. And I was wondering if that was normal, or if there's some sort of deficiency or something I could correct, or is it just fine?
Well, it is a little bit normal in that a lot of our smaller fruiting trees will have the vast majority of their growth, you know, on the outer portion of the branches. But the only thing we can try to do to correct that is have better pruning practices and try to thin out that canopy, get better light penetration, better air penetration throughout the canopy, and then you may stimulate more growth and more leaf and fruit formation throughout the entire portion of the tree.
It's so thin right now. I mean,
okay.
You can see through it.
Yeah.
I guess the honest answer is that without seeing it, I probably am not going to be able to give you an exact answer on that one.
Well, there you go. Thanks, Barb. We had an email from Doug in Indiana who says, I'm in the process of laying out our orchard. My sister-in-law made a comment about not wanting to plant apples close to plums. She couldn't give me a reason other than she read it in a book. Is she crazy? And then he says, in parentheses, I think so, but that's another story.
I'll stay away from the crazy part. But,
yeah, he's planning on having many varieties and species, and he's also going to have nuts. And
okay.
He knows, I know to keep the walnuts Black and Carpathian by themselves, have a couple of acres to dedicate for the orchard. We're located in central Indiana.
Okay. Well, this is, it's a good opportunity to talk about these concepts. When you're planning any kind of a, whether it's a couple of trees in your backyard or a couple of acres worth of fruit trees, you definitely do want to think about tree placements and also species or cultivar mixing and matching. As he is very correct with, you do want to group certain things. Obviously, if you're growing black walnuts, they need to be as far away from everything else as possible. But for the fruits, almost all fruit trees do best if they have access to pollen from other trees rather than only relying on their own pollen. Some trees are absolutely need that. If they don't have pollen from other trees, they set very little or in some cases absolutely zero fruit. So we do want to think about that. So I would tend to group the apples in a block, the cherries, the plums, you know, whatever, the pears, all your different trees, kind of block them out so that they get the best cross-pollination. As far as dangers of mixing, there really aren't any from a disease or insect standpoint. It's just that pollination.
Bob in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I inherited these blackberry, this little blackberry patch, and these guys grow 8 feet tall. They have magnificent thorns on them, beautiful flowering, thick stems, but no fruit. And I don't know if it maybe is just the cultivar is not correct or is too much nitrogen, but do you have any ideas on what may be happening there or what I could do to get them to actually fruit and bear?
Okay, first question, do they flower at all and then don't get fruit, or you're not seeing flowers either?
I do see flowers, yes.
Okay. If they're flowering and not producing fruit, it could be that they're one of our native types that really doesn't fruit that often. There are lots and lots of different types of blackberry or bramble types. You know, up here in far northeast Wisconsin, we've got some that if you practically need a tank to walk through them because they've got such impressive thorn quality and quantity, but very low fruit content. They could be one of those native sports. If they are an actual cultivated variety, I can't say with certainty, but it is possible that you have a little bit too fertile of conditions for them. But normally they don't react that badly to that, so I doubt that that's the case either. It could be that they're just not blooming at the correct time, or they're really not getting good pollen formation for some reason. Blackberries are a little bit picky about their soil type and their nutrient loading, but usually they're pretty adaptable.
Yep, usually are. Thanks, Bob. Good luck. Jay in Ferryville, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Scott. Listen, you've been going around about these brambles, and the last couple of years we've got this new spotted wing fruit fly.
Yep.
And what do you see happening with this bug?
Yeah, and people are wondering about organic solutions.
Well, okay, the spotted wing Drosophila is a relatively new insect in North America, and particularly in Wisconsin. We actually have our fruit entomologist, Christelle Goudeau, who the spotted wing Drosophila is her primary focus of research, because this is a very damaging insect for small fruits, particularly raspberries, occasionally strawberries. Blueberries definitely get affected. currants. It doesn't seem to go after cranberries, so that's a good thing for our agricultural industry, at least in the state. But it is very damaging. The honest approach right now is we don't know enough about its overwintering dynamics. We know it overwinters, but we don't know how well. We don't know if the various winters will affect it dramatically or not much at all. But managing it is very difficult. The quote that I remember hearing from raspberry growers on the East Coast is, "This insect shut us down." Period.
Wow.
So we haven't had it to that level of infestation yet in Wisconsin, but we do end up with some pretty high protein fruit sometimes because they lay their eggs right on fruit. And because of the way they can lay their eggs, they can actually lay them in immature fruit, and then the maggots develop within the fruit. And that's where you end up with a high protein fruit. There are traps. There are different types of traps that you can use and try. They are trying to develop pheromone-based traps that will work better than just the fruit or apple cider vinegar or just some of our common traps that people may be used to we're using in fruit trees for things like apple maggot or codling moth control. But there are no absolutes yet for this critter.
And that is really too bad. Jay, there you have it. There's the information you need. Probably not the best result that you wanted. Scott Royce, our guest today. Scott is the UW Extension Horticulture and Agriculture Agent for Marinette and Florence Counties. And this is his first time on Garden Talk. It won't be the last, though. We'll certainly, we're always certainly looking for new people, and he's doing a great job here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gardening can be a lot of fun. It can be a relaxing activity, but that doesn't mean that we don't need to put some time and effort into getting good results. And even then, sometimes things just don't go the way maybe you'd like them to. But, of course, figuring out what might have gone wrong this year can help you have a much more successful season next time around. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Scott Royce is the UW Extension Horticulture and Ag Agent for Marinette and Florence Counties. And he joins us today from our WPR studios in Green Bay. And, Scott, thanks again for spending time with us today.
Glad to be here.
Really appreciate it. Lots of callers online. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page to do that. Let's go to Helen in Oshkosh. Helen, thank you for waiting.
Good morning. My question is about my well-established raspberry patch, which has about 100 plants. And my neighbor had a commercial sprayer come in and spray their lawn on a windy day, and almost all the leaves on my raspberry plants turned yellow right away, and they also dropped their mature fruit. This was in the month of July. Since that time, some of the plants have greened up, but they haven't borne any fruit. I'm wondering now about next year, since I usually cut off the plants close to the ground, and then they grow up again the next spring. If the plants do green up next spring, will the fruit be safe to eat? Because the spray, as it turns out, was about 30% 2,4-D and almost 3% dicamba. And are those present a danger for eating the fruit next year, if there is any?
Okay. Well, the fact that you have the data or the information as to what the active ingredients are, you are at least ahead of the game a little bit. I was slightly concerned about how I was going to answer that, because in some cases, once fruit or vegetable plants have been exposed to non-labeled pesticides of any way, shape, or form, it's actually illegal to eat the material coming off of those plants. Without having the, I know 2,4-D pretty well, but I can't remember the dicamba label well enough. I believe that that would not be one that would have a zero harvest interval ever again. But do a little bit of research, and I don't have access to enough information to be able to look it up right now. But do some more research before you plan on harvesting fruit from them next year. My gut tells me, from what I know of the active ingredients, that you'll be able to, and they won't, as long as they didn't kill the plants, you mow them off like you normally or sound like you do, then you should be all right going forward. But do a little bit more research and make sure that there's no
lasting effects, let's say.
Lasting effects or, you know, regulations that would indicate that it would not be a good idea.
All right. Good luck, Helen. And I'm sure you've had a conversation with your neighbor.
I hope so.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Sally in Whitewater, it's your turn. Sally, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a question about our plum trees. They're covered with white blossoms and little plums the size of green olives in the spring, but they never get any bigger, and they don't mature.
Okay.
They fall off.
Do you have any other plum trees in the area?
Just two.
Okay.
One is large, 12 to 15 feet tall, and the other is about 10 foot tall.
Okay.
They are close to two peach trees, which are doing very well.
Okay. The first thing that comes to mind with what you described is that you're not getting proper pollination. There are some plum trees that need cross-pollination from, at minimum, from other plum cultivars. And in some cases, there are some that absolutely need, you know, cultivar X to be by cultivar Y for them to get pollination. So that's the first thing that comes to mind, especially if you're literally having a 100% fruit loss, that something like that is happening, because it sounds like you've had enough years of experience where it's not a late frost every single year that's causing that, because that's the other thing that will do it.
Hmm.
Okay. So the solution would be to get another plum tree.
It may be. If you know what the cultivars are that you have, you'll be able to double check that by doing a little bit of research or calling your local extension office. But that's the only thing that comes to mind immediately with the way you described the symptoms.
Good luck, Sally. Thank you very much for calling. And Tom in Frog Point, we'll turn to you next. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello, Scott. Yes, hi, Larry. I have a question. Last year, it was so delightful to see all the blue asters blooming along the highways and byways, and it was just incredible, and I was looking forward to it again this year, and I'm not seeing any. I'm wondering if the two series of droughts we had this year might have interfered with their growth cycle, or if all that spring rain we had really bothered them.
It's certainly possible. The slightly cynical answer would be that you just haven't driven in the right part of the state. We had a gorgeous aster year from Green Bay North this year. So it probably was definitely the conditions. You know, like I say, we had a pretty good growing season up here this year. We had much more consistent rainfall than most of the rest of the state. So if they got dry at the wrong time, they may not have formed their flower stalk correctly, and you just didn't get flowers, even though the plants are still there.
There you go. Thanks, Tom, for calling. An email from Julie. We're going to cover the garden with a tarp for winter, so weeds won't be able to grow until next planting season. When can we do that? Right now, probably.
Yeah, basically, whenever you got everything off of there, if you're going to go that route, you have a little bit more flexibility than most others do. Obviously, it's nice to capture as much moisture as possible and such, but inherently, as long as you've got everything out of there that you want out, you can go ahead and do that.
Ann emailed and says she has inherited the job of caring for the memorial garden at her church. Many of the plants need to be divided or moved. Is there a good website that lists the best time to divide or transplant perennial flowers or plants? Or is there a general rule of thumb for when to do it?
Yes, would be the easy answer.
Yeah,
there are some good rules of thumb, but there are also great websites out there, both educational, you know, university resources, as well as, the different species groups, you know, like the Hosta Society and all that kind of stuff. But a good rule of thumb depending on when they bloom, is the best time to split them and transplant them. If they're early spring bloomers, then wait until they're done blooming, then do your splitting and transplanting. If they're summer or fall bloomers, go ahead and do it right away in early spring.
And if they're hostas, you can pretty much do it whenever.
Yeah, do whatever you want, whenever you want. The best way to spread them is to try to kill them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, man. Facebook question from Peter. Because of the specific situation of my yard in the city of Madison, I really have only one place that would be suitable for a fruit tree. Unfortunately, it's only about 4 feet wide. For this reason, I'm intrigued by the espalier? E-S-P-A-L-I?
Espalier, yeah.
Espalier method of raising fruits. Do you have the resources regarding the espalier method that you can share? Specifically, would it be possible to take a leader tree and graft various varieties onto it?
Let's start with the last part of that.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I'm never a fan. I mean, inherently you can do it where you can try to graft multiple cultivars of apples onto one apple rootstock, but over the course of time it will never work. They'll always go back down to one cultivar because it's just not natural, period. However, from the espalier or other trellising standpoint, you can take a larger tree and make them fit an exact space by proper management, but it takes a lot of management. You've got to prune them correctly. You've got to train them correctly. You've got to do all that. Otherwise, in a really small space like that, the other option is to go with some of our super dwarf rootstocks, and you can actually maybe even fit a couple of different ones in there. But going with something like the Budogovsky 9 rootstock, which only gets, even in Madison, you're probably talking a tree that's only going to max out at 5 to 6 feet tall. The problem is they do need support, so you'll need to keep them fenced basically for their entire life because they just have such a small rootstock.
We had a Facebook comment from Barb, too, and it goes back to the guy with the cherry tree that has lots of late tiny fruit. She thought, you know, it sounds kind of like an ornamental crab to me. I think he said this was his first year with a tree. Maybe it was mislabeled.
It's definitely a possibility, yes.
Yeah. Facebook question from Julie. I couldn't bear to see my beautiful annuals freeze, so I brought them inside. Can I overwinter a begonia, impatiens, and coleus?
Yes, to B and C, and begonias, you can overwinter them too, but they usually do better if you let them go dormant and then overwinter them in a dormant state. And there's lots of information out there in doing that, but you can do that. But yes, impatiens and coleus definitely will overwinter. I've done it with impatiens of a number of different types. I've never tried it myself with coleus, but biologically, I know they can handle it.
And a Facebook question from Steve. Is there any treatment for the brown rot in cherry trees that you spoke of earlier?
Yes. Step one is proper pruning and to get better airflow. And then if you're serious about it and you've had problems with it in the past, there are fungicide treatments that can work pretty well. But it is a disease of conditions, so there are fewer organic-type methods that work. It's not that there aren't any out there, but there are fewer that are going to work well. But proper pruning, watching for it, and getting any fruit that start with the initial symptoms of it, and getting them off the tree before it spreads, because if we get the right combination of temperature and humidity, it can literally go throughout an entire tree in less than a week.
Oh. Lisa in Sparta has a question for you. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I found a a tree on the side of the road, an apple tree,
yep,
next to a crab apple tree. And it had little tiny fruits on it, about a 1.5 to 2 inches in diameter. And just out of curiosity, I tasted one of them, and they tasted fantastic. But we went back and picked a whole grocery bag full and made applesauce out of them. And it turned out so sweet, we didn't even have to add sugar to it, and it turned out the prettiest pink color.
Hmm.
Now, I wanted to know, is it possible, and this is probably a cultivar that was planted on an old farmstead, I'm guessing, at some point in time years ago. That's my guess. But is it possible to find out what cultivar that is now?
Hmm. Possible, yes. Likely, maybe not. If you have someone in your area that does work with heirloom cultivars, you got to take some notes, though. I mentioned Tony Demski earlier in the show. He's the one in our area that's pretty good at this, but he needs a lot of information to be able to correctly identify it. You can't just bring a fruit. You need to know the leaf shape, the flowering time, the flower color, and then the fruit characteristics as well.
Well, I'm moving to Marionette County here in probably January or February, and I'm going to take some scion wood.
Yep.
And I'm going to try to make some grafts because I think this tree is worth saving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the only way to do it. You're not going to be able to keep that from seed because they're not going to breed true. But collecting scion wood in, preferably February and March is usually the best time to do it. And then getting your hands on some rootstock and grafting. If you're actually coming up to Marionette County, you can watch for, we're going to do an Apple University Day that you can watch for or contact our office.
Very cool.
Awesome. Like I said, what I'll do, I want to save this tree. I really do. I think it's worth. And the fruit might be just a little bit bigger once the tree's taken care of.
Yeah, yep. Could be. Thanks, Lisa.
All right. Thank you.
Sue in Mequon. Hi.
Hi, Scott and Larry. I have some cherry trees, and they are planted kind of close to a couple black walnuts, probably within 50 feet. Do I have any hope that they'll ever fruit?
Hmm.
If they're still alive, they probably will. Cherries are not exceptionally susceptible to black walnut toxicity or the juglone toxicity. And again, I'm going off of memory, but I'm pretty sure they're not extremely susceptible to it. So if they're alive, they still should do all their normal fruiting and flowering.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Dan and DePere, hello.
Hi. I have acquired a couple of dozen black walnut nuts, and I'm interested in planting them, and I'm wondering if you could recommend a method that works best.
Well, with black walnuts, usually one of the best ways to do it is to let the squirrels do it. Otherwise, go ahead and plant them in fall, because otherwise you need to store them properly and go through all the dormancy stuff to get them to germinate next spring. So it's usually best to just go ahead and plant them right away now. Otherwise, you can, if you don't have access to your own, you can buy them from various seed places sometimes, too. Otherwise, the DNR nursery does raise black walnut, too.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
So just create a hole and shove it in there, or do I need to work up the soil? What's the...
No. Well, it depends on, what the area has in it. Usually black walnut are pretty able to handle conditions. So normally, it's just a matter of getting them down about 4 to 6 inches. However, I would recommend maybe putting a sheet of chicken wire or something similar to that over there, because otherwise the squirrels will find them and dig them up for you.
Mm-hmm. There you go, Dan. Good luck. Mike in Oshkosh. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Quick question. I have a rhubarb patch that's got two different types of rhubarb, and it used to be really great, but it's kind of becoming debilitated over the years. I need to do something with it, but what ideally to get it to spruce up again?
Okay, rhubarb is one of our perennial vegetables, and it does need a lot of fertility, and it likes water as well. So If it's in a spot where it has wet feet, that could be part of the reason that it's going downhill. And, you know, if you're I thought you said you were in the Oshkosh area, so you've got a lot of poorly drained soils down there. That may be part of it. So make sure it has good drainage. Otherwise, consider transplanting it. If you don't need to transplant it, you can probably get away with just better management, a higher fertility management, and more consistent watering.
Watering is not the problem, I'm quite sure. We're in a rather high spot.
Okay.
I'm thinking, what type of fertilizer would it like? Does it would it like some
manure is actually one of the best ones for it. But rhubarb does like fairly good fertility. So depending on what the fertility is in your exact area, you know, I'm a huge proponent of going with an organic-based one because then you get all the micronutrients right away too. That's why I seriously mean, you know, composted manure, a good layer of compost, and it can be pretty thick in this case because that'll help with your weed management then too. Otherwise, going with a more balanced fertilizer that still has a decent amount of nitrogen, such as a starter turf fertilizer or something along those lines, may be a pretty good opportunity for you.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. Back to Facebook for a second here. Gerhard wonders, can you plant a service berry in full sun?
Absolutely. Service berry is one of our most adaptable fruits. You can find them all the way from 3 feet tall to 30 feet tall. They are adapted to a very wide range of pHs of soils. They can handle partial shade. They can handle full sun. So, yeah, absolutely.
I can tell you that they do not handle full shade.
Yeah, probably not full shade, but they may survive, but they won't fruit.
Well, that's exactly what I got. I have nice plants that didn't fruit. Boy, we had an email from Kate who says the University of Minnesota Duluth students are figuring out genetically what type of apple trees she has. She had to take leaves and stems to them.
Mm-hmm.
But you could contact them about figuring out that cultivar from the last caller. Maybe can go to the University of Minnesota Duluth and get some answers there. And they've got a that campus. It's a fun. It's a pretty campus. A kind of a fun campus. I don't know if you've ever been there. Scott, but kind of a cool place.
Yeah, way back when my oldest sister went there, but that was back in like 76.
Well, that is a long time back.
Yeah.
This has been a lot of fun. In our last 30, 40 seconds, any last-minute advice?
Well, at this time of the year, we can do a lot to help our plants out. Now, up in far northeastern Wisconsin, one thing we don't have to worry about is watering this fall. But in a lot of the rest of the state, you may have to. So the last thing I would say is if you're in drier soil status yet, make sure you do give all of your perennial plants a good watering prior to soil freeze so that we make sure they go into winter with good moisture status.
Scott, a great pleasure. You'll come back and be with us again?
If it works out, absolutely.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you spending the time with us. Scott Royce is the UW Extension Horticulture and Agriculture Agent for Marinette and Florence Counties. And he joined us today from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Green Bay. It was great to have him, and we certainly will try to get him back. He did a wonderful job. And I really appreciated it. Thank you for listening as well. Monday, Kelly Harms is a Wisconsin author who has just published her first novel. It's going to be the next feature on Chapter a Day. So we'll visit with her on Monday at 11. And then, hey, it's the last Monday of the month, so the weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, will join us to tell us if the cold snap is actually early or if it just seems like it. Thanks for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.